Yep, this is your boy MZ.
And your boy Vumi.
And this is the Much Chats Podcast.
Back we are.
Yeah, back again.
Regular programming.
Yeah, actually getting used to this thing now.
Yeah, back into the groove.
Yeah, I think it's good.
66,
and I actually think it's good we are not looking at our numbers.
What do you mean?
Like looking at the numbers.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think I want to see that.
Okay.
I just think I want to keep it going.
Oh, is
it? Because I think if the numbers were like dismally low, I'd be like,
actually, it's a good thing you're not looking at them then.
That's what I mean.
Because they are. Anyway, moving on. They're not dismally bad.
They're not.
We love every one of those 10 listeners so much.
One of those 8 listeners.
So much. But yeah, man. Yo, it's been an interesting week that just passed. I totally forgot last week that I had a road trip planned with my sister.
Oh yeah,
how I was that, only was that, I was only it? Reminded like 2 days before it, so it was nice. It felt like a young surprise, yeah.
A surprise you knew about.
Yeah, but I'd forgotten about it. So when I was reminded about it, I was like, "Oh, what a lovely surprise!" No, it was great. So we went to this town called McGregor. McGregor.
Like,
I don't know how, where, and why.
Irish settlers or something.
I don't know. We tried to figure out the history of the place. It was a bit ambiguous.
I don't lie. Just put it off, dog.
Huh?
Like, put it on silent.
No, calm
down. Can you not do that?
Why are you throwing a fit?
I'm not, dog.
There we go.
Also, which one is that? Is that the A40?
It's A40. Entry level, son. But it's quite good for an entry level phone. Anyway. Uh-huh. So yeah, we went to this town called McGregor.
Where's McGregor, dog? I mean, come on, orientate us.
You think I'm orientated the way it was?
Well, didn't you drive there?
Yeah, at night.
But
no. Okay, so it's about 40 k's outside Robertson. You know where Robertson is?
Is it towards the east coast?
No,
southern, southeast.
It's
coast.
It's on the N1 past the Huguenot Tunnel to your right.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it's 2 hours away. Not too bad.
From here to McGregor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a very nice, idyllic, small town, you know, typical Western Cape, small village vibes.
Yeah,
very beautiful. Like, very nice.
Rich in red history.
Rich in red history, yes. Mm. Yeah, probably. More like,
no, I mean, could you see it?
Or yeah, definitely. Like definitely.
The heritage things,
yeah, yeah.
The buildings.
Yes, definitely. The churches, the carrots. The church was the biggest building in the town. Massive.
I was at Clan William with my girl a couple months ago. And that was the church was the highest,
the
tallest building, yeah. and like all the roads converged
to
it.
The church. Yeah, there we go.
But anyway, yeah,
So we went there for the annual poetry festival that happens there.
I saw some people chatting about that, but yeah.
Yeah, and my sister was performing in one of the exhibitions.
Oh, right up.
Yeah, she's somewhat of a poet, so.
And she knows it.
And she knows it. they were performing their poems were supposed to be around Black Thought Revisited. That was the title of the seminar.
So those poetry, was it like a poetry slam or was it like spoken word? Like how was
so
the
there was all different types of poetry, but in my sister's seminar it was just like whatever they had, they were supposed to read from their anthology.
So, like, what was the setting like? Was it in a room? Was
yeah,
it
yeah. So it's in a room. So I don't know if you've been to the Franchuk Book Festival.
No, dude, I really haven't.
You need some culture in your life.
No, I just need to go. Just say I need to go. Don't tell me I need some culture in my life.
You need some culture in your life.
So I was, give us the setting.
So okay, so the setting is basically there's different venues around the town, right?
Yeah.
And then there's lots of different events that happen in those venues throughout the 2 days, right? So it's a Friday and a Saturday. Friday, Saturday, and a few events on Sunday. So the settings are like very, like not very, but relatively small rooms with some chairs. And then you go there and you listen to poetry. Sometimes it's a single, sometimes it's like that particular poet's sitting, okay. And they're reading out the anthology. There's open mic sessions where you can go and just like
slam. Did you slam?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Why are you lying?
And then there's like,
why are you lying?
I didn't, dog. I don't do that stuff.
I don't lie. It actually seems like you would do that type of shit.
No,
it really does. Nah.
Anyway, so can I finish my story?
Go on.
So then there's different kinds of sessions. There's book readings. There's book launches. So so my sister's session, they were basically reading out their poems, and the topic was Black Thought Revisited.
Yeah.
So it was stuff around blackness and black thoughts and freedom and what. And she was presenting with another two poets.
Yeah.
And the
poems were linked or not?
No, they were not linked. They were just producing their own work. One of the poets is an ex-DG of social development.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not going to mention his name. I don't know.
Why?
It might be Flamey. I don't know.
You think so?
Yeah.
It's not like it was by choice he left.
No. Oh, no. We'll take that offline.
Okay.
cool guy. So that was my weekend pass. Very beautiful. We stayed in this lovely Airbnb.
Thatched roof top place. Notch.
Yeah, really
like,
nice.
Like 5-star, 4-star.
Like five star. Yeah, 5-star for McGregor, right?
Yeah. So racks were put down a little bit.
Not really.
Was it a house or?
It was a house. And like a three bedroom, like 2-bedroom and 1 loft.
Oh, word. Yeah. Were you in the loft?
Yeah, I was in the loft. Put me upstairs.
No, that's nice.
But yeah, so yeah, that was nice. And you just realize how, you know, the silence, you know, of the rural areas, just quietness, you know.
It's deafening,
really. Mm. Shout out there to... well done. So it's quite different. Like, there's actually no ambulances, no cars, no...
It's so quiet. It's actually something that's needed.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You start to think about things that you don't normally think about because there's space to be there.
Exactly. Exactly. And the stars as well. You just see the Milky Way. And,
oh, yes.
But it was nice. It was relaxing. Obviously, the weather was great as well.
Yeah.
Weather was good.
Throughout?
Yeah, throughout.
Oh, that's dope, man.
Yeah, it wasn't too cold. Wasn't too warm. It really was quite warm, actually.
Did you see some familiar faces?
No.
like no one?
No one.
So everyone you knew was the people you were with?
Yes, basically.
Okay.
Literally, I was also a bit surprised. I was like, ha, clearly my circles don't involve culture. Maybe there were people there. I don't know, but yeah.
I'm sure there were. I think there were. I saw some people there that... Yeah. Well, I don't know if they were at that poetry thing, but they were doing poetry that weekend. So, I don't know. But
that was fun. That was interesting. And it was just a nice break, you know. I enjoyed trips and stuff, so
yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah. What did you learn from that whole experience, really? Let me see it like this. What did you learn from the poetry that you heard that was the most significant to you?
I think there was this... there was the first thing we went to, who was a friend of a friend to my sister, and she had a couple of poems about like purpose in life and stuff like that, and it was actually it resonated quite a bit, even though I didn't admit it at the time, but it resonated quite a bit in terms of like it's okay not to know where you stand at any moment in time, like you'll sort yourself out, stuff like that. So that was quite nice, but then also just the whole experience, like different venues that we went, different poetry that we heard, it's just like poetry is such a uniquely human thing, you know. It's like, and throughout that time, I was sort of trying to rationally explain it, like, why do we need poetry? What do we do? And then I just concluded, it's like, some things don't have to be explained, you know? Sometimes people express themselves that way, and it's good, and it's nice. I mean, I used to write poetry in high school, but, like, for homework and shit, not like really out of my own thingy. But I mean, I did see it was like a nice way to express oneself, but like I just lost the knack now. But I mean it was interesting. It was interesting.
I certainly do think it's one of those things that if you are a creative person, you know, it's one way that you can sort of express that creativity, be it through something you're going through or some feeling or some idea, and you just put it into words. Really, that's what it is, because there's other representations of, you know, you can always draw a picture of something you feel, but you can also write about it.
Yeah.
And it can rhyme, it can be in iambic pentameter, whatever.
Went to the back drawer of high school. They,
what do you say? What are these ones that? I don't know. These stanzas of Macbeth. Something about Macbethian or Elizabethan.
I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah, man, I definitely feel what you're saying there. But nah, that's dope, man. That's dope. I'm glad you had a fun time, man.
Yeah, no, it was great. Time. It was good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, man, that's, you know. But anyway, I was actually I was thinking about something that I heard going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard about this. You know how lately there's been a lot of things happening in Soweto, particularly between foreigners and the locals and the shops, the spaza shops, and there's looting and, you know, people just angry. And
yeah, apparently all those stuff was happening. Was lit.
I mean, I don't even know the full story about what
I don't know the story at all.
What I wanted to talk about was, I don't know if you saw David Makura, the premier of the Gauteng. He sort of put it out there, said there'd be a new bill that will prohibit foreigners from operating certain businesses.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to be like a provincial legislature thing that's warping, or if he is going to, you know, put it up to parliament or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I believe it's probably like a Gauteng thing.
Okay.
So basically, he wants to. The gist of it is, from what my understanding, is that he wants to reserve certain businesses to locals. So in other words, things like maybe some sort of vendoring, you know, being a vendor of some sort, selling sweets and chips and whatever, those type of things, that would be reserved to the locals only. Having spaza shops or whatever, maybe owning a gym, you know, all those type of something, certain businesses being limited to locals only. And there was a lot of back and forth from people, obviously, you know, just talking on the radio. And I haven't given too much thought, but I was trying to think of the positives from it versus the negative. And it's just a very tough thing, because I think I understand what he's doing, in that he's trying to reserve. It's basically what it is. It's like job reservation.
Yeah,
pretty much, right? But businesses.
which is essentially,
in other words, it's like saying, okay, yeah, we planners, right? So it's like saying, okay, word, planners, 80% of planners in the workforce in South Africa must be South African. 20% can be foreign, right?
Oh, but is that what he's saying?
That's what I'm taking from the headline.
Did you open the story?
I did. I haven't read the whole thing, so that's why I don't want to go through the whole thing. I was just reading the headline for now. But so that's what I assume. He's basically trying to say that some of them, like maybe informal traders, so to speak, some of those businesses be reserved for South Africans only, in an effort to probably ease things, and so that South Africans can have more of the piece of the pie, really. That's what it is. In terms of the consumer, the thing that will change is that the prices will just go up. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, that's all.
I mean, that's what's going to happen, really, from the consumer's point of view.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
Ask.
So, in your opinion, is this, because we've discussed this issue of foreigners owning businesses in the townships before.
And we
concluded it was because they pooled their resources together more effectively.
That's why they thrive.
There we go.
Yeah, wait, that's why they thrive.
So,
because
hold on. So my thing here is that my question to you is that the issue of foreign, or quote unquote foreign
businesses,
yeah, right? Their existence, because if you now limit their existence numerically, right?
Yeah.
You're not really solving the problem, because what is the problem? The problem is that people don't have access to opportunity. People don't have access to resources, right? So if someone is able to open a business and thrive, it means that one, they have access to opportunities, or two, they have access to resources.
Yeah.
Okay. So by now limiting the number of businesses that can be opened based on nationality, right? Are South Africans then going to be given the resources or the opportunities they need to open a business? Or is it going to be a case where if you're saying that 80%, 20%, 80% local...
What I'm hoping is that that bill will stipulate a lot more than what I've just said. But based off what I had just said, I'm sure that there are some sort of mechanisms that they would include... that they should, because they can't just be like, okay, only South Africans can have spaza shops, for example, right? So they'll define what a spaza shop is, and they'll say only South Africans can have them. If they do just that, that won't help at all, because, for example, those South Africans might not be able to, for example, get the premises, for example, that they need to do that, right? Because they're not making enough sales, because they don't put their resources together, right?
So my question again then now is, does then this legislation have any purpose whatsoever than to be exclusionary and xenophobic?
Oh, and political gain? I don't know. But that's what I was just bringing it up, because I need to read this thing. So listen to this. Okay, so it says David Makura told the provincial legislature that the only way to propel more locals into economic participation was to exclude foreign nationals from operating certain businesses. This was part of the Township Economy Bill, a proposal that seeks to empower people who have been cast out of the economic participation in settlements outside the buzz of the province's central business district. The premier stated that they have identified certain businesses that have been dominated by foreign nationals with very little room for locals to exploit the market. We attempted without success to solicit more information from the office of the premier about which businesses they're referring to. So that, they don't even know. However, the fact that Makura's assertion came soon after foreign-owned spaza shops were raided by frustrated residents from the following townships: Dobsonville, Rockville, Zola, Orlando, Meadowlands, Mdini, Moletsane, White City, and Zondi. This leads one to think that he may be referring to businesses in the informal sector. In South Africa, foreign nationals often operate spaza shops, wholesale retail outlets, barbershops, as well as electronic repair and sales stores, among others. David Makura noted that more would be revealed in greater detail once the Township Economy Bill has been finalized and presented for government and public participation. I think that would be something that people should look out for. The Premier admitted that the outcomes of the counterfeit and illegal trade raids were proof that South Africa faced a serious border crisis. Makura called for the greater security at the borders, which are the main port of entry for counterfeit goods and undocumented foreign nationals.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
That's the article, basically. So this article is very speculative as well.
Yeah.
It's not very clear. But, yeah, I mean,
I just think it's an insane proposal, for one, because it addresses the symptom and not the disease.
Yeah. But again, I mean, it's the...
How is that a way to solve the issue? Like, that's just a very antagonistic law that, in essence, won't solve anything.
Yeah, it's actually going to cause much rift between communities.
Exactly. Simple as that.
Yeah. And as you can see, it's the economic township bill, which means it's definitely just going to be in the townships.
Exactly.
So any other business that's owned by foreigners in the CBD, and I ain't no problem. That ain't no problem.
Yeah, you know? I mean, because the tension isn't there, right? The tension.
Yeah, but what I mean is, if there's actual logic between the bill, I mean, from the bill, then it should apply, you know, but...
Yeah, I know. Totally agree.
Yeah, but that is what it is.
Anyway, so there's a bit of big news that happened this week.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
In the early hours of what was it? Tuesday? No, Monday. Monday or Tuesday?
What happened Monday or Tuesday?
David Watson, the CEO of Bosasa,
Yazo,
crashed into a pole.
What did you say his name was?
David Watson. Gavin. Sure.
I was like, what does this guy say? Yeah, Gavin Watson.
Yeah, bro. Gavin. So,
that's a good one to talk about, actually.
Yo, that's intense, bro. All sorts of conspiracies flying in the Twitter sphere.
5 seconds from it breaking, then you break.
People were like,
Alex Jones everywhere.
I also love how everyone is now an accident investigator and an expert. Hey, look, the airbag is like this. Look, the car bent like this.
This is what I learned, okay? There's no skid marks for me.
There's no skid marks.
There's no license
on
the car.
Oh, wow.
The seatbelt was intact or something.
Goddamn.
The positioning of the car, I think he was going to the airport or something.
Yeah.
And something to do with there. Something was wrong there. He had only 70 rand with him. No wallet, no phone, just 70 rand.
Just 70
rand. Like, I don't know how all these people know this information like quick, fast like this, dog.
It's because someone pulls it out of their bum and then they just go with it.
But also, I saw an interesting conversation that was happening about him. Because... a lot of people, so like people were saying, so on the radio they were like, yeah, there's been a lot of tributes and stuff. And I was like, hey, but tributes.
Bruh, the ANC pushed out a whole thing, bruh.
Yeah, so like a whole tributes and things like this. And I was like, why are they tributes? Because, you know, I don't know the history of this guy.
Mm.
So apparently this guy was a huge anti-apartheid activist, him and his brother.
Yeah.
Especially
in terms of sports.
Yeah, ruggers and all that stuff. So, I mean, I had no idea.
I'm not gonna lie to you. Some idea. Yeah.
I had no freaking idea. Anyway, but it's good to know. And then the question came up about, so now how do we judge people, right? Because that's what we do. We judge people.
Yeah.
We act like we don't, and we act like we don't want to.
But we judge
like
we should, people.
But we judge people, right?
Yeah.
So how do we judge people when it's a rap, right?
Yeah.
For me, a big philosophy of mine personally is the saying that goes Isina Muva Liyabukwa, which means, well, literally it means the one that dances last is the one that's seen, which basically means things that you do, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when so that's just me,
that's
personally
just,
right?
Yeah, facts.
So then that's how I look at it. It doesn't mean that the stuff that you did before is negated, but I mean how you finish is rather important.
Yeah.
So then everyone was bringing up a lot of his history and stuff like this, and I was like, are people only really bringing that up just because he's passed on now, right?
Mm.
Is that why they bring it up? Because you never heard anything about that throughout this whole thing, you know, throughout the whole state capture saga, whatever. Even when I was reading articles about Gavin Watson Bosaso, it always started as the Bosaso head. It never went into his history or who was, or they were never former activist or, you know, anything like that. That stuff that I read.
That's interesting, because I had the opposite experience.
So when his name
started popping up with all this Commission of Inquiry stuff, obviously then everyone now started doing some digging, and then there was two or three or four articles, like Mail and Guardian and stuff, just outlining who he was, and then I think his political background was because also it didn't make, like, everyone was like, why is this red just like so friendly with the ANC, and then like you understand why, like, these connections go way back. So the thing is, like, people talked about it initially, but then obviously now, because so many other things have come up, it's not a thing. Yeah. But then obviously now when people die, we always talk about their past, right?
Yeah, I clearly missed that one. But
yeah.
But yeah, so then in my mind, okay, I'm like, okay, word, sharp, that's good and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, shout out to him for his contribution and his family that contributed. But at the same time... I think that stuff should be said at his funeral, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So that the people who are left behind, they get some solace that, you know, this man actually did a lot of good.
Before he did a lot of bad.
They don't even talk about that, because that's not, the funeral is about the people who are still standing there. They need that comfort to be like, you know what, at least this man did, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, but for me, I don't know if the ANC... the ANC had to do what they had to do. But I don't know if it was the right move for them to do that. To be all
I also
like
thought
that.
It was like very quick off the mark. I was like, yeah, that's quick.
You don't want to wait until the memorial or something? Like, you don't want to... I mean, like, it was literally the day. They had it teed up. I don't know. But I do think that even if it's not a conspiracy, I mean, the stars align some other way, bruh. God damn.
Look, here's my
the guy was about to testify for me.
Here's my conspiracy story. Here's my conspiracy story.
What's your conspiracy?
October, he was supposed to testify on Tuesday at a SARS inquiry.
On this Tuesday?
Yeah, it's past Tuesday.
So yesterday?
Yesterday.
And he
got
86
on Monday. Anyway,
what a
so
time to check out.
Here's my conspiracy theory. Dun, dun, dun. I think.
What do you think?
The noose was tightening around your boy's neck.
So you say that,
right?
you think it was a sewage pipe?
So no, hold on. So I think your boy is panicked. Dropped off his G at work, took that company car. He was probably sourced out of his mind.
Was it a company car?
Mm. Sourced out of his mind, drunk, and he decided to make a dash for it.
In the morning?
And go to the airport and fuck off.
Somewhere. Where?
Mauritius, who knows? Somewhere where there is no extradition to buy. So, I think he did that in a moment of drunkenness. And yeah, your boy was sourced up, driving fast, panicking, crying, shitting himself.
You don't think that information would have got out already that he was sourced?
How, Sway?
What do you mean, how, Sway?
This happened at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, but the blood gets tested. What are you talking about?
They haven't released any forensic stuff.
They released, but that's what I'm trying to say. People have been talking about the mortuary did this.
Nah, dog. Mortuary just confirmed that it was him. They didn't release toxicology, because also these things take time. You don't get a toxicology report so quickly.
Hey, this is Africa, bro. We do things quickly.
I saw something else. Like, oh, they've already scrapped the car. I'm like... Like, and people are like, oh, we never scrap cars this quickly. I'm like, how do you know how quickly a car gets scrapped after an accident?
Maybe the guy works at a fucking scrapyard.
No ways, man.
Come on.
Not this person with
but
the...
Yeah,
anyway,
they would never scrap it that quickly anyway. I mean,
I don't know. You don't know.
No, they do. Come on, dog. It's common sense.
Do you know how many hours it was there before they took it away?
I don't know. But
on
they,
the road.
But
it was there for a long time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they wouldn't scrap the car. They'd still have to go do more tests and stuff from in the car.
You don't know that. Do you know that?
Yes, of course.
How do you know that?
This is basic, like, police work 101.
Tell me, give me the manual right now.
I don't have to give you the manual. That's common sense.
No, dog. Common sense is not that common.
No, that's like you saying, say you steal some, you steal something from the store. Right?
No, it's not listen. The same thing. You are talking about you're talking about procedures that no you nor I have any knowledge of after things happen. You don't know what happens to a car
you
when
don't
it goes.
Know.
You, how do you know?
Because I know.
Tell me how. You're not wanting to say. Because now you're saying common sense.
It is common sense, but I know.
Anyway, back to my story. Because
let me tell you. Because my dad was in law enforcement.
Okay.
So that's how I know that.
But your dad was an advocate, was he not?
He was an advocate and then was a judge. So I know that.
But was he a police officer and a forensic officer?
No, but he knows the procedure. What do you mean? Dude, that's the dumbest shit. So you're telling me only police officers know procedures?
No, but
that's
what?
The dumbest
but
shit.
But what I'm saying is I don't believe you are going to claim that your dad
just say you didn't, just say you don't believe. Don't say
I don't believe.
Question
it.
How I know because I'm telling you how I know.
I don't believe.
Just say you don't believe.
Anyway, so back to my story. Killing my story's vibe today. So, yeah. So he was liquored up and smashed into that pole. All
right.
End of the road. That's mine.
So basically, your theory is that he was just drunk.
Yeah, I think he was trying to make a run for it. He was delusional, drunk, whatever.
Well, that doesn't matter. So you're saying he was drunk, because that's what matters. Whether he was making a run for it or not doesn't matter, because he was just drunk and then he hit something.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Or he was drunk and drove right into that pole knowing what he was doing. I don't know.
Oh, but that's not a way to running into yourself. That pole.
That's not a way
Have you actually been to that road on Oratambo?
Yes,
I think it's fucking wide, bro.
Yeah, many times.
It's wide as fuck.
That's why I'm saying, dog, like, I don't think anyone would choose that way to take themselves out. I think they would literally, I think he was literally. I think he was literally just trying to, he was drunk, he was in an irrational state, maybe not even drunk, but in an irrational state, trying to make a dash for it, maybe trying to go to his private plane or whatever, and smack that pole.
You think it's above tampering? You don't think that's something that could happen?
It could.
Vehicle could have been tampered with.
Yeah, and a fairy could have popped up in front of his face. Like, we won't know.
We could actually know. But what I'm saying is, so this is what I want to know. Mm.
No,
what makes you think that your theory is probably most likely?
I had never at any point said that.
Yeah, I'm asking.
When I began the story, I said, let me also give you my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, so how did you get to that? That's what I'm trying to say. How did you get to that theory?
That's the story that would make a nice movie in my mind. That's the only motivation. Anyone else
movie?
Commenting?
Ain't nobody gonna come see that movie.
I'm telling you, dog.
Fuck, that's the boring ass shit I've ever heard of.
Guy's gonna spiral down.
Oh my goodness.
It's a lit movie,
boring
dog.
Fucking
it's
movie,
a good
dog.
Movie.
That
me.
Ends like,
yeah.
Come on, dog.
But then, no, the movie starts with him having crashed into the pole. And
that's
then
no psychological thriller.
We'll move backwards. Like, you start the movie when he's crashed into the air on the steering wheel, like, oh, fucked up. Apparently, there's pictures. I haven't seen them.
I don't think anyone's seen them because.
No, these people on Twitter. I'm like, oh, where are these pictures? Anyway.
Have you seen them? You would have seen them.
I've seen a fake one. I've seen a fake one.
If there were pictures, actually, they would definitely be floating around Twitter right now.
They probably are.
They're not, because we've looked. Have you looked? You've done the whole investigation.
Not like actively, but like, you know, when you look at the Gavin Watson thing, the tag or whatever, like you're bound to find something. Anyway, so
and something is popping as pictures. That thing would be like fire, wildfire.
Yeah, but it's a movie. Shame though.
Yeah, man.
The guy died. That's intense.
How old was he? Like in the 60s.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, look. Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I was in shock. That guy was not making it out of this story alive, be it by his own hand or by someone else's hand. Never. In fact, I'm surprised that Greetsy is still chilling.
That guy is too bad, but he's not going anywhere. They're watching him like a hawk.
Oh, I forgot a part of my story.
Okay.
So yeah, so then yeah, so you would be in the state, and then he crashes into the thing, and then he, and then the state security agents who were following him breathed a sigh of relief and said, "All right, now we can go home."
The state security agency were the ones that breathed a sigh of relief.
Yes.
Because they wanted that shit to happen.
Yeah.
Because they representing
the state. And in all its shapes and forms.
Okay.
Current presidents, okay. Former presidents.
Okay. Just say you're afraid to bash CR-17.
I'm not making any kind of far-reaching accusations against the most powerful man in this country. You and it must yeah, be out of your damn.
But
you must be out of your damn.
But you're talking out of your ass when Ubaba was yeah. in the shit.
He's gone from the chair. Okay. He's gone from the chair.
Yeah, okay.
You also talking mad shit
about Ubaba.
Don't isolate
nah, dog,
me.
I was telling like it is, not like it was. That's all I was doing, dog.
Like it is, not like it was.
Yeah, I was just telling you like it is, dog. Oh.
Ah, yeah. But yo, that's... But I was in shock. Like, when I saw the headline, I was like, ah, there we go. Like, literally, that was my first thought.
I was waiting for something like that to happen, but I didn't know what was happened to him. Because
you know
why?
He was
because
kill
because we hadn't heard... but that's still not ruled out. But we haven't heard anything... From Gavin or his office, like, at all since. Like, he had made no statement, nothing.
Bosasa did make a statement.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
At the hearing, at the
commission. Yeah, oh, I thought you were saying the company didn't make a statement on his death.
Oh man.
Oh, at the state inquiry.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were accountants and.
Agreed doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore, fam.
The other guy, that bald guy, the bald white guy.
Early the on. Other fat one.
No, he's small.
Because there were two fat ones, Agreed and the other one. They looked the same.
No, not him. The small bald white guy.
And he was a current exec yeah. at Bosasa. Mm. Well, I mean, he wasn't named, so why was he there? We wanted to talk to Gavin.
No, and you know that's the mean? Thing. That's so Gavin was about to go there, and then now he's dead.
He was about to go there.
In October, it was scheduled for October.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is that stuff, I mean, I would have liked to just see the skin marks. That's all.
The thing
sometimes
is,
the simplest of things is actually...
Like, but the thing is, Mzed, if someone... Complicated. So with my story, yeah, if he was so out of his mind, he wasn't going to have the reaction time to press the brakes and like, out of my very limited experience of things that can happen when you're drunk and driving.
No, you know what? Actually, Vumi, people who do drunk and drive, they have a reaction. If he was someone who's never drunk and drive, like he's never drunk and driving before, like he's never driven under any influence or anything, he's never been behind the wheel, then maybe that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But people, I think they gain a sort of a tolerance in terms of how they can do stuff under the influence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, look, man, no one will know until... But the thing is now, no one wants to believe anything because this dude's been involved in the most. So even if they produce a forensic report and an investigation and a what, there's going to be so many people that are like, oh, yeah, but that's not what really happened. He's chilling in Mauritius somewhere or whatever. So it's going to be one of those things where there's going to be an official report of what happened, but then I know a lot of people are going to be like, but did it happen? Simple as that.
Yeah, and also, I'm interested to see at what point CR-17 will start to be judged for the things that he did, right? In in his presidency. I'm not talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see at what point do we start saying, okay, this is where we give. Like this was Cyril's doing, be it good, be it bad, or be it whatever, you know, because I think everything that's happening bad right now, it's all Jay-Z's administration. So I'm just wondering at what point, like the economy, I don't know when, at what point in time, will the economy be the reason of Cyril, for example?
I get what you're saying.
I don't know if you understand what I'm
saying. No, I understand what you're saying.
But
like the thing is, that's so complicated. Because the thing is, like, you could argue that from the first day.
So essentially,
like,
sorry to cut you off. What's dangerous is that then, to some people's eyes, he can actually never do no wrong.
Yeah, but then in other people's eyes, he can do everything wrong.
No, but that's not. No, but I mean, like, in terms of, like.
Listen to what I was about to say.
Okay, go on.
It's very complicated because it also depends on what perspective you're looking at it from. So someone who is expecting him to take tough decisions straight away is probably going to criticize him for the fact that, let's say, they haven't sorted out Eskom in terms of, like, cutting the labor complement or solving that issue.
People, sorry to cut you off again, but I don't see people criticizing him.
I do.
Where?
Whole Moody's was even like they're taking their time with Eskom. They're not sorting Eskom out. Come on.
But that's not criticizing Cyril.
It is. It's criticizing the government that's in power at this time.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When people criticized Jay-Z, and we did that a lot, but we didn't say the government is doing this. We said Jay-Z is doing this. Do you understand what I'm saying, though? Even though we know that it's not necessarily.
Okay. And then another thing, if you want to now take examples of literally mentioning him, I don't know why you're taking that stance, but anyway. So yeah, people are saying that Cyril is he takes time to make decisions. He's what do they call it? He's slow off the mark. He's indecisive. There's the word. Yeah, that's been the rhetoric. I think probably 2 months into his presidency, that's been the criticism throughout. Mm. The thing is, I understand where you're going at, but I think this is also like that. Where you're coming from is also, I think, a very flawed perspective because it simplifies the problems that overlap between different administrations, which is the point I was trying to make initially, is that, like, you could choose to criticize.
No,
wait, hold on. Let me finish, dog.
Okay, go on.
So you could criticize someone from the moment they take over responsibility, that, like, no matter what, they're going to be criticized until they actually solve the issue, and then they'll be praised, right? And then there's other people who say, it's like, no, you can't criticize the person now because all these problems that the previous person created have knock-on effects which have to be addressed, and they don't get addressed instantly, right? Which is the popular discourse at the moment. But it's one of those things where it's more complex than that. Because you could then say also that that Jay-Z was also hampered by things that Thabo Mbeki had put in place. Like, Jay-Z could have very comfortably said, like, oh no, this AIDS crisis that we're dealing with is because of Thabo Mbeki, and like, that's that. Do you get what I'm saying? And then people could then criticize Thabo Mbeki or criticize Zuma. It depends on which perspective you're looking at it from. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to set it from an economic perspective, it's like the moment we take a view, let's say, if we say, let's look at things on an annual basis, right? Again, it's very difficult because things don't happen, like, things don't reset every year. Do you get what I'm saying? Or things don't reset after every administration. Do you get what I'm saying?
Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first thing is I want to say is the whole AIDS thing. People absolutely blame Thabo Mbeki for that. No one is like, Jay-Z is the one that made those decisions. It's absolutely.
But then people also blame Jay-Z.
I allowed you.
But then
I allowed you. Let me finish.
But then
let me finish.
No, I'm gonna cut you off once because you cut me off once.
Let me finish.
I'm gonna cut you off.
No, so, let me finish. No, I'm not.
But
done.
Then on that
I'm
thing,
done. I'm not done.
People were saying,
I'm not done. So the thing, no, I'm not done. The thing is with the economy.
We're gonna
as
continue
well.
Like
the
this.
Thing with the economy.
It's not
as
gonna
well.
Happen. It's Tabo, not gonna
in,
happen.
In Tabo,
okay,
in Tabo Mbeki is in
so
Tabo
with
Mbeki's
the ARVs
era,
thing.
He,
with the ARVs,
him and Trevor Manuel, those guys implemented policies that you can attribute to things that happen
economically.
People were
saying that Jay-Z is not finding
the
second.
The other thing is that with Cyril, there's certain things that he ran on, right? He ran on. One of the things was weeding out corruption. The other thing was investment into South Africa, right? Those things, in my view, are one of the are two of the important things that he said he would do, right? Yeah. So at what point, that's just my question, at what point do we start attributing those things that impact corruption and the economy to his doing?
Give us your opinion on that.
I'm asking questions.
I'm asking your opinion on that. Just out of curiosity.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I see. That's why I'm saying.
I don't have the
answer. No, no.
Am I not supposed to ask?
Yeah. But then that's why. I'm trying to give you an answer, but then you're fighting me on my answer by asking another question. What I'm telling you is that it depends on where you want to place that question and how you want to frame it, right? So you asking at what point do we start to criticize Cyril at what point do we analyze Cyril based on the president thing, eh?
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
But then now the thing is like your answer, in order to get your answer, you need to frame it, right?
Okay.
Right? So I could tell you we could have started criticizing him from the moment that he accepted the nomination to be president. Right. Or you could criticize him from the moment that he didn't unbundle SARS within 3 months of taking over, or whatever.
Okay. Right? Let me ask you this thing. Mm. When would you start?
I think I've already started in certain aspects, but I think when I would comfortably start to reassess. I think by the end of this year, if I'm not seeing any, like for example now, but I don't think we're gonna have time to discuss it. The economic policy that was pushed out by the Ministry of Finance, turnaround strategy. I need to read it actually. So I think if by the end of this year we don't have some critical things figured out, right? So as in concrete plans that are going to happen in terms of Eskom, like what's really going to happen there. If we don't have a situation where we're finally addressing issues like getting to the bottom of this expropriation without compensation issue. Mm-hmm. And then my third thing would be to seriously start considering and have serious plans to address South African Airways, and maybe to a certain extent to now that if there's a situation where we clearly see that there's people still in control within these major issues, let me not only say state-owned enterprises, within the major issues of government at the present time, if there's certain people that are in there, right, that clearly don't show that there's been a shift in terms of good governance, in terms of clean governance, in terms of corruption free and all that stuff, then I'll begin to criticize.
Okay, so just two things, but answer them when I'm done. The first thing is that, would it be the concrete plan or the actual implementation of, right? That's the first thing. Mm. The other thing is I lost my train of thought there. The other thing was, fuck, what was it?
So with that one, for me it would be the actual plan and the strategy, and I think I need to read through this economic policy.
It came back.
So in terms of implementation, because I know of those issues that are highlighted, it's not something that he for a fact is going to see the end of, or that we're going to see the end of for the next 5 years. I can tell you that now. Simple as that.
My thing is that I have a feeling that there's quite a tussle between ministries in our government, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So this plan that I haven't read it, the plan that Minister of Finance put out, I can't imagine it doesn't include the intricate, how do you say, holding of hands with other ministries in order to implement whatever it is they want to implement through this plan. Now, if you have that tussle happening within people who were within the same party as well, how much confidence should one have in your in a plan which is great of a plan, but will it won't materialize in which the way that you envision it because of those certain issues, right?
So,
and it sort of comes to another point where about the whole CR17 thing, where the whole thing about weeding out corruption and putting competent people in key positions to do the deed type of thing. If you require some ministry that, and you know in that ministry that corruption is rife, or rather maybe you know that in the Free State there's some plants or some industries, important industries in the Free State that are integral to the success of part of this plan that is put up, but you know that you have a lot of pushback from this province, for example. How are you going to complete these things? And if you can't, as the head of state or whatever, get a handle on those things, what are we doing?
So you see, that's a very interesting question, and one that I tend to agree with what Bruce Whitfield wrote about it. So if you see the way that this policy document was put out, is that it was put out for public comment straight onto the Ministry of Finance's website. So already what that has done, or what's happened there, is that it's first of all circumvented, not really circumvented, but it skipped the national executive process, right, of the ANC. Okay, but what's happened is that, because I do happen to follow Tidombo in on Facebook, is that I've seen him in a couple of meetings with the ANC's economic advisory council.
Yeah, I was about to say there's no way.
So it skipped the NEC. It hasn't gone to the NEC.
I'm asking about that.
Yeah, it skipped. So it hasn't. So this policy document has come straight from a ministry, right? And it's gone straight to all the other ministries. So it's a thing where it wasn't, because it was supposed to be tabled next week in a cabinet meeting, right? But by releasing it like this, okay, there's two things that happen. One, the most important thing is that the public is aware of the initial form of this plan. Right. So what that does is that ticks one of the CR17 boxes in the aspect of transparency. Right. So already you've put out the initial draft of this plan to the public. So what happens now is that civil society, private and the state, everybody has access to this document and everybody comments on it. In fact, the minister said that people should be commenting on this. Right. So already, releasing this a week before the cabinet meeting, you know how some people live for this shit. They'll literally start commenting the shit out of it, right? Yeah. So then this gives the administration as it stands at a certain level of sway, because one, now that civil society groups are aware, there's going to be pressure. So obviously these civil society groups are going to pick what they like and what they don't like from that document, right? And whatever they like, right, there's going to be a strategic assessment by the current cabinet or the current administration. They're going to be like, these are the things that we can easily push on because we have public input on these things, like, yeah. Right? So when you take it now to cabinet meetings where you're talking about these scuffles and these things, it's like then they have political bargaining power. They're going to be like, but look, man, the people are saying this. The people want this and this and this. They don't want this and this and this.
And we don't want to say that, look, your department doesn't want this to go through.
Exactly.
So you don't not bad.
So that's the one thing.
I get that.
And then the second thing for me is that it's apparently, because I haven't read it, it's apparently a very, it's a document, say about 70 pages, and it's quite granular. And it looks at things in quite a serious amount of detail, and with some serious statistics from Stats SA, right? So it's also not a fluffy document in the sense of like broad policy aspirations. This literally talks about the numbers,
yeah.
Right? So that is also very important, because then now we can have the experts, the economists, weighing in on all these calculations, yeah. And having the private sector weighing in on these calculations. And again, it's one of those things where, because it went straight from formulation process within the Ministry of Finance straight to other ministries and didn't go through NEC, didn't go through cabinet, it hasn't been massaged for political sensitivity. And this openness and transparency is going to be helpful, because then...
That's really the first point you're making.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, because they have the numbers. It's not just...
Oh, so it's about the second point. Numbers. You could have just said that. You have to go.
But yeah, word, man. I need to read that thing. I'm quite keen to read it.
Yeah.
But, let's get out of here.
Yeah, man. It's been a
rich episode.
Okay, hold on. What was that one about?
Confrontation.
That was a good one. Got it. Yeah, okay. What is it? What is this policy called, guy, by the way? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
All right, anyway. But let's get out of here. It's been your boy MZ.
And your boy Vumi.
And this has been the Much Chats Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.